embark upon the most important part of our week, the worship of the Lord, coming together Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. Three most important things we do every week is to hear from the Lord as He delivers to us His Word, and we certainly do rejoice in that this morning. Let us give it the attention that it certainly does deserve. Isaiah 57, verse number 15. Isaiah 57:15. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place, with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble, and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. For I will not contend forever, neither will I be always wroth, for the spirit should fail before me, and the souls which I have made. For the iniquity of his covetousness was I wroth, and smote him. I hid me, and was wroth, and he went on frowardly in the way of his heart. I have seen his ways, and will heal him. I will lead him also, and restore comforts unto him and to his mourners. I create the fruit of the lips. Peace, peace to him that is far off. To him that is near, saith the Lord, and I will heal him. But the wicked are like the troubled sea, when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked. It should come as no surprise to each of you this morning that we live in a world where we are constantly surrounded by misery. We're constantly surrounded by scenes of suffering. If you turned on the news this morning before you come to church, I don't know how smart that is or not, but if you caught the news at all this morning, there's suffering down in Florida over some that have been shot and killed, scenes of misery surrounding the people that are there. We see scenes of babies being born with diseases prematurely and drug withdrawal. We see scenes of suffering as people deal with the effects of war and of violence upon them. We can recollect pictures of the mass graves that were uncovered in Germany and in other places. We see misery and devastation from storms and floods and earthquakes and difficulties that come upon our earth because of the curse. But all of this misery that we're talking about here this morning, all of that is just simply the natural outworking, if you will, of sin and the effects of the curse upon the earth. Those examples of misery should not shock us, though they are frightening to a degree, they are disheartening, they are troubling, things we don't like to see, and would stop at all costs if we could and it was in our power. But yet, as we consider them, they should not come to us totally by surprise. Because we know the earth that we live upon has been cursed, sin is present, and these things do happen. We notice also here in verse 21 a second kind of misery that is present in the world around us today. Verse 21 says, "There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked." This is also something that we can testify to. As we are surrounded by the wicked, or in other terms, what he is saying here is the lost, the unregenerate, those that are still in their depravity and in their sin, those that are following after the ways of Satan, that are in what Ephesians chapter 2 verses 1 through 3 described to us, that condition of being dead in trespasses and in sins. That brings a misery all its own. They have misery because, as is described here in verse 21, there is no peace. In sin there's great misery. That misery is seen in the drinking, in the gambling, in the drug abuse that goes on. It's seen in the sexual activity that is rampant in our world today. It is seen in the pornography. It is seen in so many of the things that mankind engages in to try to just for a moment forget his misery, just for a moment be detached from his sinful condition and his depravity and all that it has brought upon us. This misery is manifested more and more every single day. As we watch the news, as we talk to people at work, as we see people around us, we see that they are miserable because of the weight of sin that is present upon them. It always makes me think of the man there in the tombs of Gadara as Christ comes across and meets that man who had been taken by the demons and tried to be restrained but could not be, and he lived there without clothing. He lived there cutting himself. He lived there in great pain and turmoil and agony. There was great misery in this man because of his condition until, of course, Christ came. But this misery that we can see in the lost and unregenerate world, it shouldn't surprise us either. Brother Keller always had a saying, and probably still does knowing him, the saying was, it shouldn't surprise you when a billy goat stinks, because that's their nature. And so the misery we see in the world because mankind is following after their sinful condition and their depravity, being enslaved to sin, brings misery. And that shouldn't surprise us either, as we see those things come about because of that lost and dying condition that they are in. So this misery that we've talked about already this morning, both the kind of what you might call a natural misery that is taking place because of simply because of the environment that we live in, being in a sinful world and a sin-cursed earth, but also because of man's natural condition. These are things that should not surprise us when you run into miserable people, and they are everywhere. But the third kind of misery that we want to focus our time and attention upon this morning is altogether different. It's altogether different because this kind of misery is not natural. This kind of misery is not something that is a thrust upon or just an outworking of a condition. It is not something that they don't have a choice in. That would be Christian misery. There are many people in the world today that are saved by the grace of God and are simply miserable. They are. If we took a poll this morning and it was fixed in such a way where the results were completely anonymous, you couldn't know who it was or whatever, there would be more than you would think people that would respond this morning in this congregation to say, yes, I am miserable in life, the things that are going on in life, and how my outlook is concerning life. I'm miserable. I am unhappy. I am constantly upset and worried, and I am constantly in a state of what one would describe as misery. That is a wretched state to be in, but yet it's a reality for many of God's people. Now, at the outset, understand, we're not talking about depression. That's altogether different. We're not talking about what you might term as some kind of imbalance that causes a person to act in a certain way. That's not it either. What we're speaking about this morning is that God's people today have a tendency not only to look like the world and dress like the world and act like the world in so many ways, but along with that comes the misery of the world upon God's people. They tend to be that. So much so that in talking to people, looking at people, watching people, it's almost as if people prefer to be miserable. It's almost as if people prefer to live in a state of constant complaint and upsettedness in a place where they have nothing good to remark about or praise the Lord for. And again, we have moved on from talking about the lost and from the effects of the world. We're now talking really only about God's people. And I think it is so pervasive within Christianity today that people make the conscious decision, really, that they prefer to be miserable. Now, if you go and ask them, as I will ask you this morning, does anyone here really want to be miserable? They'll tell you no. People will say, no, I don't want to be unhappy. I don't want to be miserable. I don't want to live in that state of misery. And yet, as you look at their lives, they certainly do tell another story. So people will tell you they don't want to be miserable, but all the while, everything that they do in life is pointed to being miserable. So I thought this morning that we would help those kind of people along. Maybe there are none here this morning, I don't know. But I thought we would help those kind of people along, help them out, and make it a little easier for them to be miserable. We're going to think about this morning some keys or some ways to be a miserable people. Some ways or some keys to being in misery in this life. Because, as we said, in a lot of ways, that's what people set out to do. And so let's give them some help along here this morning, and let's make sure that they hit all of the right things. Let's make sure that they do all of the right things so that their misery can increase, so that they can become even more and more miserable. Think with me here this morning. Turn first of all to Hebrews chapter number 10. Some keys to being miserable. First thing that we're going to bring about this morning, again, talking to the people of God. If you really desire to hang out and to stay in a place of misery and unhappiness and upsettedness and despair, if you really want to do all that you can to sink lower in misery and stay there for sure, first key I have for you this morning is to be unfaithful. Be unfaithful. If you want to be miserable, make sure that you find for and look for excuses that will cause you or that will commit you to being unfaithful to the Lord and to His things. When we say the Lord's things, He's got at least four general things that we'll throw out there this morning. The Lord's day, the Lord's word. We find the Lord's day, the Lord's word, but also the Lord's house and the Lord's work. Think about those four things. If you want to be truly miserable, make sure that you're unfaithful in those four areas. That's not just touching, of course, our hour or two that we spend together on Sunday morning, but that's talking about every day of your life it affects. The Lord's Word, the effect that it might have upon us every day. If you want to stay miserable, stay out of the book. If you want to sink deeper and lower into that state with the rest of the world, ignore what God's Word has to say. Stay out of God's house. Stay away from God's people. Stay out of God's work. Don't commit yourself to doing any of the Lord's work, but stay out of it. Of course, here in Hebrews in chapter 10, you know the verse we're going to read. It talks about being unfaithful, or the fact that we need to be faithful as God's people. But hey, if our aim, if our goal is misery, then we need to make sure we don't do this. Hebrews 10:25. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching, as the manner of some is. So if you want to be miserable, follow that manner. Follow the manner of the people of the world, of the religion of the world. Follow the example of the unfaithful. And I can guarantee you that you'll find misery. You'll find that place and that emotion, that state of being that so many people are looking for, clamoring for, and doing everything they can to achieve so that they can be like the world. So definitely you want to stay away from the Lord's house, the Lord's word, the Lord's work, the Lord's day. You want to do everything you can to be unfaithful in these areas. We won't turn there, but if you think about Moses in Exodus chapter 4, God called Moses and He said, "You're mine, but now I've got a work for you to do. I want you to go and I want you to say to the children of Israel that the great I am has sent you. Tell them that I'm going to rescue them. I'm going to deliver them. I'm going to release them from this bondage with a mighty and powerful hand." And what did Moses do? In verse 1, he said, "Well, what if they won't listen?" In verse 10, he said, "I'm not eloquent heretofore, neither am I able to speak." You know what it tells us in verse 11 of chapter 4? It says that God was angry with Moses. You don't want to be miserable, get God angry by being unfaithful. You want to live in that place of misery and for everything that it is, get God mad at you. Make Him angry. Make excuse for not being able to do what He has called you to do, what He's given you to do. And you can experience misery too. Definitely be unfaithful in these ways, because if you give your all to the Lord's day, to the Lord's house, to the Lord's word, if you give your all to the Lord's house and His worship, if you give your all in these four areas, it will be nearly impossible for you to live in misery. So make sure that you avoid that. Secondly, this morning, turn to 2 Timothy chapter 3. When we think about misery, we think about people being what we would term as miserable. Not only are they unfaithful, and again, this isn't something that you just have to take my word for it. You look back over the course of time, and you've known some unfaithful people, the service of the Lord here in this church. And you can think about their state, you can think about their position in life, and almost to a person, you can find that they're miserable. You can find that they were in some state of being unhappy, some state of misery. But also, not only be unfaithful, but secondly, to be miserable this morning, you want to make sure you do everything you can to be unthankful. Here in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come." Now he's talking about today. He's talking about now. He says, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good." He's describing people here that are miserable. The people that are around us today, the people we've already talked about this morning, and how they act and what they do. It says here in verse number 2, they're unthankful. And we know that society is definitely that way. But for a child of God to live in a state of unthankfulness will definitely and most assuredly breed a miserable condition. I believe a lot of people are unhappy simply because they're unthankful. Because they do not live in a state of returning thanks to God for everything that He has done and given. And so therefore they think they're entitled to everything they get. And you know what happens when those blessings begin to dry up a little bit? They just begin to trickle in instead of flow, or they quit altogether. All of a sudden, there is great misery brought on by unthankfulness. Brought on by unthankfulness. To be a thankful person, you have to stop and realize that what I have, what I've been given from salvation to protection in life, to provision at our table, you name it, whatever you want to say, you have to realize that it came from somewhere other than me. And it wasn't because of my good. It wasn't because of something I had done, but somebody else, namely God, has given it to me. And being thankful means that we can have peace with God. Look at Philippians chapter number 4. This is why, if your aim is to be miserable, you got to make sure that you are an unthankful person. Because here in Philippians chapter number 4, verse number 6, "Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." Do you see here in verse 7 how that the peace of God is directly related to being thankful? When we started off, we read in Isaiah and how that the absence of peace brings about a miserable condition. Certainly in the lost, they live there. But for us that are saved, if we are unthankful, there will be a lack of peace within our soul. There will be a lack of being right with God. And of course, that brings us to a very miserable condition. So, some of the best advice you can get this morning, if you want to continue to be miserable and a child of God, just remain to be unthankful. Don't pause and bow your head and pray and thank God for the food every time you sit down to the table. Don't end your day by thanking God for the peace and safety He's allowed you to have throughout the day, that He worked in ways that you couldn't even know and understand. Definitely don't in the morning thank Him for a good night's rest and for safety while you had your eyes closed, for deliverance through the night, keeping us out of harm's way. Certainly don't thank Him for your salvation. Certainly don't thank Him for your church or for truth or for anything else He's given you. And you'll find yourself sinking to new depths in misery. You will be able soon to claim to be the most miserable of all the people in your circle of friends or fellowship if you follow this advice. If you are unfaithful, if you are unthankful, because someone that is thankful expresses joy, expresses praise. Someone that is thankful has a spirit about them that is opposite what misery is. That doesn't mean they're not sad. Doesn't mean that they're not burdened. But very often it means that they don't dwell in misery. So make sure you avoid that at all costs. Thirdly, turn over to 2 Peter chapter 3. It's hard to put these in order if you're trying to accomplish true misery in your life. Trying to run to the excesses of the world, trying to fit in, trying to be miserable. Because I tell you what, the world has gotten to such a place where if you're not miserable, you stick out. I mean, really. If the first thing you have to say to someone is positive or encouraging or praising to the Lord, then you stand out quite a bit. Because people expect to hear a complaint. They expect to hear, especially when you're at a store or at a place of service, they expect to hear why you're upset or why they've done wrong or why you want your money back. All those kinds of things. And so when you're not miserable, you tend to stand out a whole lot more. So as God's people today, we're not really into standing out, we're into blending in. So these things come in handy that way. The third thing, you want to be miserable, you need to be unholy. Read here 2 Peter chapter number 3. Verse number 11. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hastening unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens, being on fire, shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, look for new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Wherefore, beloved, seeing that you look for such things, be diligent, that ye may be found of Him in peace, without spot and blameless. Verse 14 there finishes with the word blameless or holy. And we find here again, next to that, we find the idea of peace. We are all of God's people, when Christ returns and things come to an end, we're going to be found of Him. And that's what it's talking about here. Whether you die before He comes or you're alive and well upon planet Earth, when Christ comes, He's going to take us all up to God. And what we find here in verse 14, He says that ye may be found of Him in peace. Peace, here again, we're met with. The opposite of misery. We find blessedness or holiness attached here. The question is, when we are found of God, will we be miserable in that day? A lot of times, we talk about what we'll be doing when Christ returns or when that day comes. We talk about being seen and found and being ashamed, all those kinds of things. Will we be a miserable people when He returns? Will we be found of Him in peace, or instead, will we be found of Him in misery? Nothing leads or breeds misery more quickly than unholiness. Unholiness. He says here, blameless. To be blameless before Him without spot. He's talking about righteousness, holiness. Yes, I know in Christ we are eternally righteous and positionally sanctified. I understand all that. But He's talking here about our living. He's talking here about our daily lives. People have things switched around. They think that to be happy They need to live like the world, but what they found is quite the opposite. And so, we tell you this morning that if you want to be miserable, make sure you live a life of unholiness here today. Don't separate yourself in dress or in talk. Don't separate yourself in places that you go. Don't separate yourself by the things that you do, the things that you say, and how you conduct yourself. Don't separate yourself. But make it so that you're like the rest of the world, and you'll find yourself in misery just like the rest of the world. Don't be holy. Or, in other words, be unholy. Misery, as is often said, loves company. The world wants nothing more. Satan wants nothing more than for us to be in company with the world and share their misery. And so if that's your aim and goal, be unhappy. We're here in here close. Go to 1 Peter chapter 2. Verse number 9. Because here's the danger. If you don't commit to being unholy, you run the risk of being happy. You run the risk of being joyful. You run the risk of realizing your calling and place in where God has given you. And here we find sort of that warning. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse number 9. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of Him who hath called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that, whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. You see, God says here that we're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. In verse 9 and 10, you know what? He's saying you're not miserable. And this is how you should act. You should do these things. Be honest. Do good works. Glorify God. You'll bring praise to Him. And so you see the danger here. If you're trying to be miserable, stay away from what these verses say. Stay away from what they present to you. Because they will lead you to a place of blessedness and happiness. They will lead you to a place where few find residence in today, in the will of God, in the favor of God, being in His fellowship constantly. Oh, what a wonderful place to be! Unless it is, of course, your aim is to be miserable. And then, it's the last place you would want to find yourself. So we need to see here today that if your aim is to be miserable, then don't separate yourself. Fourthly, this morning, if your aim is to be miserable, then you need to be unkind and unloving. Nothing brings misery on and like this. I mean, obviously the things we've already said will bring it on and everything. But the more unkind you are, the more unloving you are, the quicker and deeper you'll find yourself falling into misery. This too is opposite of the world's thinking, because they would say that, you know, if you look out for yourself and if you, you know, keep things for yourself and all of that kind of mentality, you know, then you're going to be more happy. But the opposite is true. A good tip about being miserable is you should be as critical as you can about everybody. Ignore what Matthew 7, 1, 2, and 3 say about judging. Ignore what they say about the speck in your own eye or the speck in the other's eye and the beam in your own. It's not important. Don't worry about that. Ignore that if your aim is to be miserable. And continue to be critical of everybody around you. Continue foster that, what's the right word? That air, that atmosphere of nothing being good enough or nothing being right. And making yourself the center of those things. And when you do, you'll find yourself achieving the state of misery that maybe you didn't think was possible. You know, and not only being critical, but also gossiping, tail-bearing, backbiting. All of those things that come natural to our flesh, God says, don't do. And we shouldn't. Unless our goal is to be miserable. A lot of times people fall into the trap of misery. They get themselves far down and they say, you know what, I'm taking other people down with me. And they criticize and they gossip and they tail-bear. And today it is easier than it has ever been before. Preachers used to only worry about the phone. And the phone, you know, when people would go home, they'd get on the phone and start gossiping and talking to people. Well, now we are in constant communication with lots of people. And gossip is so easy. Tail-bearing is so easy. Putting others down is so easy. Making them feel bad about their life and about the things they do, like they don't measure up to us, is so easy. If you want to be miserable, continue with those actions. Proverbs 20 and verse 19 talks about that. Also complain. Make sure you complain about everything. Complain, complain, complain constantly. To be in misery, you want to do these things. And the better you are at them, the quicker you'll accomplish a greater deal of misery. But these aren't all. Let's move on. Not just to be unkind, not just to be unholy, unthankful, or unfaithful, but fifthly, and you can turn to Jeremiah 17. Fifthly, to be miserable today, you need to be unyielding. Completely unyielding in your life. And in fact, the best advice that I could give you this morning to accomplish the greatest degree of misery in your life is to stand up here and say that you should follow your own heart in whatever it tells you to do. That you should do whatever feels good to yourself and whatever your heart wants, give it. Whoever it falls in love with, go for it. Whatever it tells you to seek as a career or as a calling in life, do it. It's probably the fastest way to misery. Because when people do that, they find themselves in marriages not centered around God and soon headed for divorce or separation. They find themselves in careers that don't lend themselves to serving God, but rather serving money and serving a career. They find themselves in many different situations, and none of them bring about good things. They bring about misery. Jeremiah 17. Jeremiah 17, verse number 9. The heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked, who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. The heart, or that natural center of our emotion and will, it's wicked. It is depraved. And though we are given a new heart in a sense when we are saved, we have a new creation within us, that old nature doesn't leave. And so many times you hear, oh, but that's who I fell in love with. That's what my heart wanted. I have to be true to myself. If you want to be miserable, follow those actions and that line of thought. Do those things. Encourage your kids. Man, I mean, you don't have to just be miserable yourself. You can teach your kids how to be miserable by doing these things. Tell them to fall in love with whoever their heart says. Tell them to seek whatever path in life would make them happy and their heart happy. Because it leads to misery. Nobody can truly know the misery in their heart. But in verse 10, it says, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins. He knows. He knows. So to be miserable, be unyielding. Don't put those things aside. It sounds so counter to what the world would say, but by being submissive, being yielding, giving in to what God says is right for your life, it brings about happiness. Man, I've never seen a person so happy as when they have surrendered. Surrendered. Whatever it is that God is working on them to surrender, they've given it to God. They've said, you know what? No more am I going to dress like this, act like this, talk like this, do this. Whatever it is in life. Or this is the direction for my life now. Never do you see people so happy than when they're in the center of God's will. But that takes sacrifice. That takes yielding. And that yielding brings about a great deal of peace. And is the cure in many ways for misery. Are you miserable this morning? Well, if you're not miserable enough, just remain unyielding or submissive to the things of God. And you'll find yourself in a greater deal of misery and set an example for the rest of the world. Number six, as we bring this to a